Welcome to Because. I'm your host, Mark Zyla. This week, we hear the second part of my conversation with Adam Peters. Adam is the director of operations at Clock Inc. here in the Quad Cities, works in the show choir world as a clinician and judge. He's worked in politics. He's done so many things. But at the end of the day, Adam is just such a force for good in our community, and I really enjoyed speaking with him, and I hope you enjoy learning the second part of the Becauses of Adam Peters. Bit about in this show is about like the career element of things, and I want you to dive into a little bit, thinking back to maybe that those first months that you were back from Luther, and maybe talk a little bit more about the boring element of like of the business side of things from that moment until now, I suppose, because I have to imagine that it's saying yes to certain things and being around certain people allows that ball to start rolling.
Yeah.
So if you have any tips or like you decided I'm going to go do this thing today. And this is, so talk about that a little bit for us.
It's kind of strange because I am one of those people that was like the first to kind of do this. Like, mm-hmm. And people remind me of that all the time. And it still doesn't really sink in with me. Like I have kind of created, I was one of the first people to create this sort of path,
right.
Or let people know that you can do
right.
what I'm doing.
Or define it as a path.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh my God. My parents for years were like, what are you doing? Like this is insane. Like
right.
just go get your vocal ed degree and be a teacher and call it a day. And
right.
it's like, that's not what I want to do. Like,
mm-hmm.
but I still want to be involved in this. I love this. And I know I can give back. They finally have started to come around because they can see what I have created.
Right.
But back to your question, some tips, which I mean, they're not the best tips because I feel like a lot of the younger generation don't want to hear the advice and the things that I did to like get where I'm at. But
mm-hmm.
it's taking a lot of unpaid gigs.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It
right.
sucks. It
yeah.
really does. I get that. But you get so much incredible experience with people that know 100%. What they're doing. And
yep.
in this field, this is not a moneymaker.
No.
Like, we're not doing this to make hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like,
right.
that's not why we do this.
Yeah.
So, like, these people that you're kind of getting information from, they don't have, they're not getting enough money to pay them.
Right. I think a thing that is, oh, I'm so happy we're having this conversation because I've been, like, begging for legitimate moments to talk about these
yes.
things, because like it seems hack if you're just like, let's talk about music business, but like when it comes organically it feels so much better. But
yeah.
I like 100% agree with you, and I think that something that I'm gonna try to choose my words correctly because I don't want to seem like too much of a boomer, you know what I mean, but like I think meme culture has kind of erased this understanding that everyone's careers, every person's careers, no matter like if it's big, small, however you would describe a career, starts off with something that is less than ideal.
Yeah.
And like, I think the rub is trying to determine when you have graduated out of that first step. And I think it's way too easy for us that are, you know, and I'm a part of this culture, man. Like I Instagram, start my day with it.
Yeah.
You know, for better, for worse.
Same.
You know what I mean? But like every time I scroll past, you know, this whole like There's always one thing about, you know, I'm going to put $3,000 worth of equipment into a $200 car to get a $50 gig. If you're at the level in which you're investing that type of money into the tools to do the job, you might not be taking those $50 bar gigs anymore.
Yeah.
But like $50 bar gigs are step one.
Yeah.
Or step zero.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, you don't look at REM and go, REM, why don't you come and play my bar for $50?
Yeah.
Right? You kind of have to get smarter about determining if you're dealing with Amazon or if you're dealing with the Green Box Theater or, you know, any number of, like, I think, cultural organizations that do not have resources to do things.
Yeah.
And so for us to treat the Adler Theater and the Black Box Theater similarly is a little bit insane, right?
Absolutely.
And I think it also tells people who haven't started this journey yet that there is no step zero or no step one. And to me, that's actually discouraging. You think you're being encouraging, but you're actually being discouraging.
Absolutely.
Because you're telling people that step zero or step one on your journey will inherently be predatory. And that's just not been my experience. Yeah. It's been a lot of really well-meaning people who are trying to do a thing in a community that doesn't have things.
Yes.
And you can't both say, there's nothing to do here, I want things in my community,
yeah,
but not support these, like, fledgling type efforts.
Yeah.
Because they're so important.
Absolutely.
Like you can't, like, we see this in so many different places. It's like, you know, I unfortunately always go back to sports metaphors. It's like, boy, I love watching the NBA finals, but God, elementary school basketball sucks. Like, that's just such a stupid opinion to have.
Yeah.
And it's just, and anyway, so thanks for bringing it up because it's like, hey, y'all, like, there, for every story of a person that will tell you, I said yes to a free gig or I said yes to a crappy paying gig, for every person who tells you their story stopped there, there's exponential numbers of people who have used it. I met another person there.
Absolutely.
And like for you, I want you to even describe that story more because like you're a living example of saying yes and going forward. But
had I not said yes to so many of the opportunities that were maybe not paying or paid poorly, like I would not be where I'm at. Like the fact that I would accept the amount of money that Muscatine originally was trying to pay me. And, you know, we have a problem because I do feel like people are seeing what they have to do to get the experience and they're just not wanting to do it because they want to be just automatically paid what they think they're worth.
Right.
But they don't actually understand that that's going to take a few years to like really make happen.
Right. Or that in this space, you know, like when you kind of talk about resumed work versus like non-resumed work, which it's like when you came out of Luther College, if you had to put on a resume what you were capable of, I'm imagining knowing you that there was a part of you with confidence to say, I can do all this stuff, right? And I'm imagining that there's another
part. It's actually the opposite, but okay. Yeah.
I can't do any of the things. Okay. Me.
Yeah. Okay.
If when I came out of school, it's like, I can do all the things you want, boy.
Yeah.
Like I can be principal horn of your orchestra. I can balance your budgets, I can do all these things, but I had like no experience actually doing those things. And so like to be able to put on a resume that I started a woodwind quintet and did some level of fundraising to fund that, did I enjoy doing that work? 100% no, because on a Saturday I would much rather be out doing 1,000 other things than writing a grant proposal.
Oh, God.
But boy am I glad I did it.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway.
Well, and that exactly horse, that so the time aspect too is like, again, we want the cheat code on how to like get out of like spending all this time into, you know, creating this career. And it's like, there is no cheat code. You're going to have to sacrifice your weekends. Like I have not had a free weekend until I started my first like 9-to-5 sit down job 2 years years ago. I'm turning 35 in July.
Right.
Surprise, Adam Palooza happened, but my birthday is in July. But yeah, like I only started having free weekends because I finally got my first big boy job. Like I put in the time, I, you know, was at a bunch of things that maybe sometimes I didn't want to do, but like at the end of the day, it got me to where I am now.
Yeah.
And yeah, it sounds super boomery, but like, suck it up, Buttercup. Like yeah. You've got to do the work.
Right. And like, I hope, and this is kind of like we were talking about earlier, I think before we turned the mics on, just this like, my obsession with being able to hold two things as being true at once that might be diametrically yeah. opposed, which yeah. is we can both say that, boy, it sucks that we have to do it this way. I wish there was something better.
Yeah.
And then hopefully by the time we are actually old people and come yeah. back into this room and have another discussion to say that, hey, we've actually done some work to make those beginning steps suck a little less for the next generation.
Absolutely.
But you can't be so obsessed with this ideal world that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. It yeah. doesn't exist that if you want to be a musician, like, I feel like 100%, like, sure on this. Like, you cannot be a musician without playing a free gig.
Amen.
Like, you just can't do it.
Retweet.
Right. And, you know, I hope to be able to be a 90-year-old to say that I have not seen a free gig in 20 yeah. years. But, like, it's just not the case. And at the same time, it's like, you know, before people roast me, which not enough people listen to roast me on this kind of things. It's like, I'm not saying that legitimate predatory behavior is acceptable.
No. Yeah.
Because, man, you know, you can find it.
Yes.
It's out there all over the place in legitimately every genre of music and every workplace. There is legitimate predatory behavior. But a lot of times in the art scene, there's just no resources.
Yeah.
They ain't got it to yeah. give you. And so the actual question is, do we want to do this thing together? Is there some level of kind of shared ownership in it?
Yeah.
You know, like a good way, I think, to find a predatory place is like, if you've been asked to do this free work, how much are you being presented as a person who is like part of the team that's creating it? Like if you don't get mentioned or you're pushed yeah. way down to the bottom or something yeah. like that, I would probably be less inclined to take that.
Yeah.
But it's like, I would, again, you know, more often than not, you'll find people who are like, we ain't got resources, but you'll be stage director, or you can, like, you know,
yeah.
really demonstrate that me accepting this free work has built something that I can then leverage for future paid work.
And I think it's not even just the free work too. Like I have been in a boat before where like I wanted someone to come and work with our show choir combo. And I contacted a young person that was a combo director of a show choir somewhere else. And they had great success. They were winning the caption award best band at all the show choir competitions. Mm-hmm. And I wanted our group to sound just as good. I was at Muscatine. We didn't have a lot of money. This would have been this person's first clinic that they ever did with another group.
Right.
And said, like, this is not enough money. I wish I could pay you more. This is all we have. Could you please come in? No, because that person said that they are worth this much money.
Right.
Yes, I know you are.
100%.
I know you are, but right. we don't have the money.
Yeah.
So it's like, don't turn down the opportunities. Saying yes to that opportunity that might not pay or pays little is going to open more and more doors to you mm-hmm. and give you so much more than you can imagine. Right. So,
and no one is asking you when you get to the point where your schedule is full. No one is, if somebody's asking you to do free or low paying work and you have higher paying work, they get it.
Yeah.
We're all in the same yeah. world together.
Absolutely.
You know, like, and I never bat an eyelash when a musician says, hey, I'm going to get to go play with St. Louis Symphony or Chicago. I do it too.
You yeah. know,
you get called up to the big leagues, you go do your thing. But if your calendar is empty, sitting around and saying you're worth something and not getting that doesn't make your bank account any higher. And so anyway, I would encourage people to be a little bit more thoughtful around that and not just be so hard about, I believe this and I'm not going to do anything for anything less or whatever.
Yes. Say yes more than no in life and doors will open.
Awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about your non-show choir work, and I'll be very interested to see how you then pull it back to show choir, because you're really good at that.
Yes.
But what other kinds of things have you, you used this term, what you fill your cup, what else have you filled your cup with?
So, like I said earlier, the show choir component has always kind of just been there in my entire adult life, and again, it kind of touches on what we just talked about, like, that was not enough money to pay my bills.
Right.
Like, so I have always, always, always been in food service. So while I was doing some of those show choir things in Muscatine, I was managing a restaurant as well. Mm-hmm. And making money to pay the bills. But I've always been interested in politics as well. Mm-hmm. And in Iowa, we have the very lucky recognition of having the first caucus, which now is a little bit more debated, and we might not have it. We might have it. They don't know how we're having it. They don't. Mm-hmm. So that's a story.
Is it both sides? Just one?
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, so we have always been lucky to get the front row seat to every single presidential hopeful that has ever been. And, when I was in Muscatine in 2012, we had the Republican circus come into town and met a lot of those presidential hopefuls and went to their rallies and asked them hard-hitting questions that aired on CNN and got the write-up in the paper about, oh, yeah, this guy is a political guy. He goes to everything, you know. So I had the bug, and I shouldn't skip over the fact that in 2008, when I was at Luther, Barack Obama ran for president, and as a senator, you know, they didn't think he was going to go very far. But I went to a rally, listened to him, decided he's my guy, got involved in the campaign. They made me a precinct captain at the caucus, but instead of me staying in Decorah, because that was like reliably blue and they knew that Obama was just going to wipe the floor there, they knew I was from Walcott. So they sent me home. And I had arguments with the mayor at my caucus, which was super fun. But yeah, we ended up winning two of the three delegates at Walcott. And I'd like to think that I played a role in that. The campaign contacted me afterwards and asked me to become an organizer in Oklahoma.
Oh, wow.
A, I had never heard of this organizer thing. And thought I was very suspicious of it and just thought, yeah, this isn't for me. I've got my Luther thing going for me. And I said no. It is one of the biggest regrets that I have, because I think had I said yes, which you'll hear in a minute, I say yes down the road. I could have been a part of the Obama administration. Who knows?
Right.
But, you know, hindsight's 2020. So, yeah, 2012, Republican circus. I'm asking the Republicans hard-hitting questions, kind of getting, having a little fun with that hobby. You know, that Obama wins again. We're fine. We get to 2016. I meet this grumpy guy named Bernie Sanders. I'm like, this guy's great. I like him. I'm going to support him. He obviously didn't become the nominee. Hillary Clinton was. I backed her right away.
Which we met at a Bernie Sanders rally, yes, which is like the best story ever.
Yeah.
Which is when Rachel and I moved to Iowa, we kind of loved the fact that we were in a state that seemed to matter politically. Like growing up in West Virginia, like no candidates ever came to West Virginia because, you know, they just knew how it was going to go before it even went. So like seeing a presidential candidate was like something that we never thought about. The literal day that we moved to the Quad Cities, we went downtown, and it was during Bix weekend, which is like a super good time for political candidates to come to the Quad Cities, just because like there's tons of people downtown and you can shake all the hands you want to do all the
lots
things.
Of photo opportunities, a
lot of photo opportunities. And if you're a runner, man, you can take down the Bix 7. The person I met wasn't going to be taking down the Bix 7, but I was literally sitting at Falbo's Pizza.
Ooh, we used to have a Falbo's here.
We did.
Wow.
It was in the Redstone building.
Okay.
So where Zeke's is currently, used to be Falbo's. Anyway, so we're sitting in the window and I'm like eating pizza and I was like, I think that's Chris Christie. And Rachel's like, nuh-uh. And I was like, literally. And it, I mean, it was like, he was just walking down the street by himself. Like he had one handler who was like several feet behind him. But again, it's like, to me, I just seen him on TV and like on, and on these debates and stuff. And you imagine, I figured he'd be rolling with a team, but it was just him. So anyway, I like ran out and like got a closer up picture of Chris Christie just because I couldn't believe it. So then we decided that we kind of wanted to see as many as we could in whatever ways that we could. And so we went to a Bernie Sanders rally, and my wife has like some of the best energy out there.
Truly.
And in the sense of like, she is like probably nervous about everything, but when it comes time to do something silly, like it always just happens.
That light switch turns on.
Right. So we're like, I'm admiring your Bernie Sanders shirt, which was literally a shirt made of all Bernie Sanders faces. So we're like, this guy's awesome. This guy's awesome. And then when it came time to like take pictures at the end, you were getting your selfie with Bernie Sanders.
Grumpy man Bernie.
And in the background of this picture is my wife photobombing.
Right in the middle. Like, Bernie doesn't want to get close to you, so there was enough room between us that just one head showed, and it was Rachel's.
And so after the fact, we thought that was the funniest thing. And we didn't know you at this point other than just saying, hey, at this time. And I think she was like, sorry for messing up your picture.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we eventually like found you on Twitter.
Yes.
Yep. And I was like, anyway, so the connection was made there. But hey.
Yeah.
You're totally
right.
Wild.
You are so right, though. Candidates in the wild without their staff is such a weird thing. Like, I remember one time, this was way, way, way back in the day, when John Edwards was running against Obama.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Monday night. Davenport was a ghost town because everyone was at the symphony concert. Exactly. Where else would you be? I was with a friend who was visiting town. We had Centro's restaurant at the time, downtown Davenport. I decided to treat my friend to a nice dinner. Mm-hmm. We go. There is not a soul in the restaurant as we are walking up because you can see in the windows. I'm about to open the door and John Edwards swoops in, opens it for me and my friend. We walk in. I'm like, oh my God, it's John Edwards. His wife comes in. They sit down at a table. We're sat like two tables across. There's no one in this restaurant. And it was so crazy. And I remember looking at them and being like, oh my gosh, they're so in love. Which is, if you know the John Edwards story, that's no bueno. No bueno.
I was like, could you tell that there were problems?
No, I could not. It's wild because the things we found out. But anyways. Fast forward to Bernie Sanders. Yes. I supported Bernie. He wasn't the nominee. Supported Hillary. Did not volunteer because I thought, we've got this sewed up. Like, we're going to be fine. The world's going to be fine. Yes, Donald Trump is crazy, whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some supporters of him listening, but probably not. Mm-hmm. Anyways, when she lost, I was not like, oh my God, like the world is falling apart. My thought was, oh my God, I didn't think this could happen. And I did nothing to stop it. Mm-hmm. I took some selfies with Bernie, tried to like support him through that. But like, I did no hard Scrabble work.
Right.
So I kind of had this deep kind of soul-searching time where I kind of, you know, as the administration went on with Trump, really starting to figure out, like, what do I need to do to be a part of the solution?
Right.
And I had always lived in Iowa. And before my 30th birthday, I told myself, I need to live somewhere else. So I moved to California. Mm-hmm. And this is where everything comes full circle.
Okay.
So remember when I listened to that When David Heard with Eric Whitaker from John Burroughs High School? Well, through my show choir work and, you know, becoming a thing in the show choir world and becoming well-known and doing things all over the place, I actually befriended the artistic director of John Burroughs High School. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman who just came to Adampalooza. She vanned from California. Her name is Jennifer Unjin. She is brilliant. She is a creative artist that creates shows and costumes. She's an amazing costumer. She choreographs. But yeah, that was her alma mater, and she kind of had the same thing with, like I did, you know. She helped her alma mater out, and then she got hired and kept going along. And she rented a room out to me when I lived in California, and we were roommates. So that kind of is that full circle moment of, like, this person that I competed against her group in high school becomes one of my dearest friends, and, like, just love her to pieces. Yeah. So I lived in California for a year. That was a hustle. I did everything under the moon out there. I bartended, I background acted, I did all of the things. I just kind of wanted to live life, and, you know, but at the end of the day, California, very expensive.
Yeah.
So I moved back to Iowa to continue doing my show choir freelance work. And when I moved back was the 2019 cycle of Democrats beginning to announce that they're running for president. And I knew that I was not going to sit on the sidelines this year. I knew that I wanted to be a part of a campaign. I just didn't know whose campaign. So I started doing the shopping around of candidates, and the day I flew back to from California to Des Moines from a show choir trip, I landed in the Des Moines airport and got in a car and drove to Marshalltown to hear Pete Buttigieg. It was the day after he launched his campaign. He started in Des Moines the day before. They thought, you know, maybe like 100 people would come to it, and there was like hundreds and hundreds of people. They had to move it outside.
Wow.
So this Marshalltown event was supposed to be a small house party, and they thought there'd be 50 people there. Well, I was the first person to arrive, and within 45 minutes, there were 250 people. Wow. They had to move it outside. And through the weird workings of the universe, some protesters showed up. There was a guy dressed as Jesus. There was a guy dressed as Satan. There was a guy dressed as Pete. And they were whipping each other and on a loud microphone talking about how Pete's going to hell because he's gay and all this stuff. And it was wild. And because I was the first person at that event, and because I had been talking to people and people knew me, some organizer came up to me and said, "Did you drive here?" And I said, "Yeah." "Can you get in your car and go block those protesters out front?" "Sure." Get in my car, block the protesters. The event goes on without a hitch. She comes up to me afterwards. We start talking. She thanks me, asks me where I'm from. At that time, I was living in Iowa City. And she goes, "Oh, well, I'm based in Iowa City. You know, we should get coffee." I get coffee with this wonderful person. Her name is Sarah Goldstein. She was one of the first two people hired on the campaign for Iowa. And within a few weeks, again, this is another thing, say yes more than no. I was basically assisting her for free. We were traveling the state, picking places where Pete was going to go get ice cream between events, you know, doing all the logistics, planning things. And then before you know it, she's saying to me, "You need to be an organizer on this campaign. Apply for this job And as I said before, I said no to the Obama job. And what could have happened then? I have no clue.
Right.
So I said, you're right, I do. And mm-hmm. I applied and got the job. I was one of the first organizers they hired in Iowa with 20 others. And the next year of my life was every single day Pete Buttigieg.
There are worse things, I think.
Yes, yes, yeah. And that's how I got really into politics. I mean, that was my first political job. Mm-hmm. And yeah, obviously Pete won the caucus. Some people say he didn't. I don't care. We got the most delegates. That's how you win a caucus. Mm-hmm. He ended up pulling out of the race before Super Tuesday, and then COVID started.
Right.
So that was kind of... I know COVID is not great, and for a lot of people, it was devastating. But for me, it was a time of like, okay, intense recovery from this campaign that I've just done for a year. And right. I mean, when I say every day, like it was pretty much every single day and okay. just 14 hours a day. So
it's a lot of work.
Yeah. And then, we went on, and I applied for a job for the Biden campaign when he was in the general and worked for him in Pennsylvania.
Wow. So, yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. Let's try to start to pull everything together.
Yes. Help me out here.
Yeah, yeah. I asked this question, and I think we'll kind of, kind of take some turns here probably. I've been trying to find a way to ask this question very eloquently, and it's not come out yet in 40 episodes, but we are not done, right? We're still young folks.
Yeah.
And you as an artist and as an individual aren't done, hopefully.
No.
And so with all of that, like at this point in your life, what are some things maybe that you've learned, kind of what would you like all of these kind of experiences to coalesce into? Another way I've put it is like, what should the world look to you and see over the next, what's like, what are your goals in the next 10 years? But I think it's just always interesting to see what of all those experiences seem to centrally matter to your character. Because I'm going to imagine that you're not the same person that you were when we started this story.
Absolutely.
And I think all this stuff kind of piles into who you are. And in that, it's like, there's passion in music, there's passion in politics, but there's also seemingly a passion for how all of those things exist within the community that you live. So play around with that soup of thinking.
It's really difficult to answer that question because you would think there would be some concrete answer that I am like moving towards. Like there is this goal. Mm-hmm. I am not, you'll never meet a human being like me, I'm pretty sure, because I like to keep myself open to any opportunity. And maybe it's something that I've done before, but also if it's an opportunity that I've never done before, I am open to it. Mm-hmm. I am a single person. I don't have children. I have never had a career path that is just like one route, mm-hmm. Which allows me to kind of get to say, like, I don't have an answer for you.
Right.
And I am intrigued to see where it goes as well as you. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't think I would be working for an LGBTQ community center 3 years ago. Like,
yeah.
That wasn't a goal. That
right.
That was not in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
But because I worked on these political campaigns, there was an answer revealed to me of like, yes, I am doing work that is helping people, but is it actually, is this political work actually helping people?
Mm.
Some people, yes, but can I have a bigger impact if I'm doing something that is more specific, in a community?
Some would say down in the weeds.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So like, for some people, they would have just continued to ride this political train, which I could have. Like, I had opportunities to join other campaigns and just keep on that political grind and make that who I am. But at a core level, it didn't feel good. It doesn't fill my cup. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, my show choir work that I do every season. So that made me investigate further into wanting to look to what options I had, and that led me to Clock. Mm-hmm. So
tell us about Clock.
Yeah, so
just from the bare bones of it.
Clock Inc. Has only been around for about 5 years. It's a community center, an LGBTQ community center based in Rock Island. We serve all Quad citizens, Iowa and Illinois. And most of you know, in Iowa right now, we have a lot of anti-LGBTQ legislation that has just been passed. So it is just dire. It's needed more than ever. We have 8 different support groups that meet throughout the week, all ages. A lot of people in the Quad Cities kind of have this idea that Clock is just for youth. Mm-hmm. It's not just for youth. It's for everyone. Mm-hmm. We have a transgender non-binary clothing closet. We give free clothing away. We have a binder program for our transgender brothers and sisters. We have a small library. We have a computer lab. We do free and reduced counseling. We do events and trainings. We do trainings with educational institutions, organizations, businesses. We're just trying to fill that emotional need that LGBTQ Quad citizens have. Mm-hmm. And the world has come a long way since I was a kid, but we also have so much work to do still. Right. So the work that I do with Clock, I'm the director of operations, which the fancy way in a small nonprofit like this of saying what I do is, I always tell people, is I do everything except the professional counseling. Like, right. It is literally, you are fundraising one minute, you are wiping the floors the next minute, you're doing everything.
You're working the dunk tank.
Yes. Yeah, we just did the dunk tank at Quad City Pride. Well, I worked the dunk tank, but Mark sat in the dunk tank.
So I got dunked.
He was our birthday boy dunky. So we were so proud and honored to have him. But yeah, so like that work, I never dreamed of doing until I started in the political world, and I was going towards this, like, I wanted to do more. And now I'm doing the work with Clock, and I have people ask me all the time, like, how many years are you going to do this? Do you see yourself in the Quad Cities? Right now I am doing this thing and I love it, and that's all I know. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of freeballing it. Like, I just am, like, going forth and letting the world... Did I say freeballing? That's weird. I meant... What did I... I don't know what I meant to say, but not freeballing. I said it a third time. That's weird. Anyways, I meant to say something else, but yeah.
Freestyling.
That's it. Yeah. That's... Oh, God. I am wearing underwear, I swear. That's amazing. But yeah, so like... I wish I had an answer, and it would make my mother happy if I had an answer, but right. I don't. I've had so many amazing opportunities just kind of come a knocking, and the goal is just to give back to this world and use the talents that I have while doing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think this is a good place to end.
Yes, I do too.
I will say that, I hope your life is good right now, because so much of what you bring to our community is just goodness. From, from being a bingo caller at the Raccoon Motel, which is like a silly thing in and of itself that you do excellently. And, just being a face around town that when you meet people, I see you interact with all kinds of folks, and everything always starts with a smile and a hey. And you know what we need? We need a ton more Adam Peters in the world than we need other kinds of folks.
That is so too kind.
Well, I hope to have you back in, let's do a check-in in 15 years.
Okay. Yeah.
Might have to be remote. But hey,
that's fine. Yeah.
At that point, everything will be remote.
I'm eager to see what that looks like. So, awesome.
Well, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks
I appreciate
for having
it.
Me. This is great.
Because is produced by Mark Zyla and Jaron Michelle in the studios of WVIK Quad Cities NPR. Thank you for listening to this episode. Because I read Because by Mo Willems, illustrated by Amber Wren, I wanted to learn the Because's of people I admire. Do me a favor and thank someone in your own Because story, and join us next time on Because.